Don't adjust your dial. Today on Podcastmagoria. Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcastmagoria's Halloween A to Z. My name's Autumn.
And I'm James.
And today, folks, we bring to you our P movie. P standing for Pontypool. Finally.
Yes! This 2009 hour and 37 minute long movie. We had mentioned this in a previous episode a while back. You know, one of our list episodes. And
do you have the specific episode so people can listen?
I guess it would be the biological horror episode. We've been excited to watch this movie since discovering it on a ton of lists for biohorror and like zombie films, all that stuff. And
yeah.
I look forward to kind of exploring this concept while talking about the movie because of the fact that it is genuinely different.
It is very different from probably any zombie film I've seen.
Yeah.
And we have had a couple of people here and there suggest this film to us as well.
Yeah.
It's funny because when we talk to people at conventions, like this one's come up a couple of times.
Yeah. And we hadn't heard of it.
Yeah.
And oddly, like, it's so bizarre to me because the fact that like this one, I don't think really breaks past a certain point of popularity.
Yeah. And, yeah, it seems very niche.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, if it's just strictly because 2009 maybe was a weird year for horror. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there were so many other, because this is around the time that Zombieland came out.
Right.
So maybe giant zombie wave was going on.
I think it might have just gotten washed away with every other zombie movie. It just got pushed to the side.
Yeah, because there was a million zombie projects going on this year.
Yeah.
Or at least around this year.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that for a movie being a slow burner.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it is a slow burner.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. I also think that the trailer doesn't really do it justice.
No.
Because the trailer just makes it seem like they're trapped in the studio and like some creepy things are happening.
Yeah.
It doesn't really necessarily give away that it's a zombie film or anything.
Which is probably for the best, but at the same time, like it gave me more of a vibe like the movie Frequency.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, so it's just like it's something in that aspect. And so.
Right. So I think people probably saw the trailer and were like, eh, if you did that.
You missed out.
I'm just going to say you missed out.
Oh, man. We're flipping the script again. Damn.
I know. So let's get into it so we can actually tell people why this is a cool movie.
Yeah, okay. Oh. Yeah, the movie opens in a very unique way where you just kind of see the sound wave on the screen and you're just kind of thrown into listening to a radio broadcast, which is semi-nonsensical.
Well, yeah, it starts out pretty normal, you know, talking about a local missing cat, Honey.
Yeah.
And then, it goes into just kind of word salad.
Yeah.
Where he's describing, like, how the town got its name.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, Pontypool.
Yeah, and then just spelling it out weird way. Like, because, like, the name of the movie is coming onto the screen, and it's just random letters.
And I love the way that they did that. It's so cool and ominous.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I was really excited because I thought the movie was going to be called Tidepool. But yeah, like it was a very interesting intro.
Yeah, very cool way to start the film. We're now seeing that there is a snowstorm happening in Pontypool.
Yeah.
And our fearless DJ is driving through the snow to get to the studio to make sure that people get their morning weather forecast and all that. And he comes across somebody walking in the snow and they're just acting very oddly.
Yeah.
You know, he asks them if they need help and they just start to also kind of do the word salad thing where they're repeating a word. And as he's talking to her, she starts to repeat kind of what he says as she walks away into the darkness.
Yeah.
Now, from this scene, since I didn't know too terribly much about this film yet, I didn't necessarily know that it was a straight up zombie film.
Yeah.
Since it's kind of been vague, I honestly thought that we were going to have some flesh pedestrians happening because that's totally something they would do.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to figure out how to mimic.
How to mimic, yeah. And which, that would have been so cool.
Yeah, but honestly. I mean, we'll sit on that idea, Autumn, for whenever we make our flesh pedestrian movie. Yeah.
But I am not, no, as an indigenous person, I am not, no.
Oh, well, you know.
I know not to mess with that.
I'll mess with that.
Okay, yeah, you're white, you can do it.
So Mr. Pontypool, as I refer to him a lot in my notes.
Mr. Pontypool.
That's right. His name is Grant. But he arrives at the station and greets the assistant, Laurel Ann. Tells her to look up reports.
What a name.
Yeah, Laurel Ann. Like,
Laurel Ann. Like, Laurel Ann. What a tongue twister.
Yeah, yeah. Laurel Ann.
Laurel Ann.
Oh, man. I sorry to all of our Laurel Ann listeners. But anyway, he tells her to start looking up any 911 reports about anybody being weird out in the snow and such. She has also been kind enough to gift him a bottle of whiskey to use to have some more fire in the old furnace.
Yeah, because he's obviously not too happy to be in the studio today.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him.
Yeah.
But hey, as I said, people's got to get the weather reports.
That's right. Well, okay, so let's talk about Grant a little bit as far as the character goes. So you kind of figure out very quick that Grant he's formerly a shock jock type of radio personality. We don't really learn too much about what his past was, just that he's now exiled to this small town radio station.
Yeah, and his manager, producer, whatever, is very strict with what he says.
Yes.
Like, she's constantly being like, oh, you can't say it like this.
Yeah,
you can't say it like that.
Well, just imagine, if you will, for all of our Frasier fans out there, if original series, not reboot, but you know, if Roz was just constantly telling Frasier what he can and can't say,
yeah,
to the detriment of his style of reporting. Grant is he's very similar to, I would say, almost like an Imus in the Morning, but less racist.
Yeah.
And terrible.
Yeah.
I was really scared initially.
Well, we don't know what he was like before.
Yeah, what he said to get him. I mean, he must have said something really awful to get him thrown into.
He just straight up said the N-word on maybe on broadcast.
Well, and also, this is a Canadian broadcast network.
Yeah.
And that's something else to kind of consider as far as the brand of horror that we are getting ourselves into.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've watched many Canadian independent horror films, or if I have, I've not realized it.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
you know, Canada, in my opinion, still, I've said this before, that country is that they are the leaders of horror.
They just
get it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good horror that's come out, and like a lot of good indigenous horror comes out of Canada too. Like, well,
and that's what I love about like kind of like this age, like Canadian broadcasting, they've really have jumped all in as far as indigenous voice, which is fantastic. Wish we would have had more of that in this, but this was 2009, so they hadn't got there yet.
Yeah. Anywho.
Yeah, Grant starts reporting the weather, and he's, you know, he has to go to Ken, the helicopter weather reporter, and all these radio stations have that, you know, the sound of the helicopter in the background, the Yeah, okay, it's looking real cloudy out there, and traffic's all sorts of backed up, so everyone be sure to just be careful, wear your seatbelts, and take it slow and steady. That's my helicopter reporter voice.
Wow. Yeah. Very good impersonation, James.
Yes. Grant is just livid, I think, about how this all is going. Yeah. And is shit-talking Ken the entire time.
Yeah, I feel like he's very, like, trying to quickly get through the weather report so he doesn't have to hear from Ken anymore.
Right. Yeah. And he's just like, he keeps trying to throw these alternative spins on everything that he's talking about.
Yeah, because the next story is about how they found these like pot growers in the town. And he starts to make up all these conspiracy theories like, oh yeah, and they were armed and dangerous.
That's
and
right.
It was a nuisance to the community because they were just having all these gunfights and what. And that's when Sydney stops him. She's like, hey,
don't
be saying all that. That's not part of the story. Stick to the news and weather, what we have written for you.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine having Grant's job. Like us, you know, we're a couple of schlubby podcasters.
Yeah.
So we don't have, with exception of sometimes a bird outside of our window, we don't have somebody chatting in our ear the whole time telling us what we can and can't say.
Yeah.
And we don't have somebody live chatting on the computer with us also telling us what to say. And so between Laurel Ann and Sydney, Grant is getting hit from both sides as far as what he wants to say. And something I thought was interesting is often Laurel Ann is kind of stoking the fire with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She wants to, I think, see him as the shock jock.
Yes.
Rather than what he's putting on now.
Yeah.
But it is, they do this a lot in the movie where it's overwhelming as an audience because you get to hear Sydney talking in his ear and then, like, the person on, because this is a little later, but there's like a person on the phone talking to him too.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, I could not be a radio host like two or three people talking to me at the same time. And I have to figure out what I'm supposed to be focusing on.
Right. Yeah. That's very challenging. I mean, sometimes it's challenging sitting here talking to you and looking at my notes and trying to think of how I'm going to translate whatever scribbles are on my page.
Yeah.
So I couldn't fathom having all of that noise basically happening at once.
But I did think it was a really unique device in this movie to show that because it makes you feel overwhelmed and anxious.
Yeah. So it's so amazing that before the horror really begins in this film and
you feel disoriented already.
Yeah, you're already going, I don't know what's like, I can't handle this.
Yeah.
And so it's very entertaining. The next story that rolls around is how there was a 911 call. Ultimately, it was that fishing season was over. And some guys were getting into a fight over one of the fishing huts being hauled away. And Grant is alluding to the fact that, oh, it's a bunch of drunk guys. And also possibly the police officers were drunk as well.
Yeah.
Which Sydney pulls him off the episode, pulls him aside and goes, listen, you cannot say that kind of stuff. You're going to scare the people of this town. And also, like, one of the officers is a recovering alcoholic and happens to be Sydney's ex.
Oh,
it's just like, oh, geez. Like, it's interesting because we get these little peppered in. We do get a little bit of information about Sydney's character. And because she, especially when stuff starts to kind of hit the fan, she keeps like anxiously looking at her phone.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, who is she worried about?
Right.
Or why is she? I kept thinking initially that she was getting a call from like the studio manager.
Yeah.
And telling her, get this shit under control or you're out.
Yeah. Or I thought that she was getting reports.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And not divulging the information.
Yeah, yeah.
To make the situation worse. But I do like how Grant, about all of this, he's like, well, of course I want to piss off the audience.
Yeah.
Because the more people you piss off, the more they're going to say, hey, you need to listen to this guy because he pisses me off.
Yeah.
I just can't stand what he's saying.
Yeah, so you get more listeners that way.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, okay, James, we need to start pissing some people off.
I feel like this year's A to Z, there's been a few episodes that maybe I've done that. I think out of the gate, we probably had already made a few people upset.
And... yeah, so if you're upset about our Fives episode, tell people to listen to us.
That's right. Or there's a couple episodes later on in this season that will probably also make some folks upset.
Oh, but, yeah.
So, you know, stay tuned. And tell your friends how much I'm a jerk. Grant gets... Oh yeah. And also, Sydney reveals to Grant that he needs to lay off Ken because he is not actually in a helicopter, but driving around in his car. And that's how he knows what the weather is and stuff. He's not actually flying around. And Grant kind of... I would like to understand better, and I don't... The movie does not really go into this. One, I would like to know a little bit more about Grant's past. But two, it seems almost as if this is Grant's first actual broadcast. Because how does he not know any of this stuff?
Right.
But he had also very clearly recorded promo stuff. Because when he arrives, they're already playing his promos.
I feel like a lot of that stuff might not necessarily be things that he would think to ask about.
Sure.
Or... that they would necessarily think to divulge
maybe this
that
was,
to him?
Maybe this was the first time that he was in this block, this time block, maybe?
I'm not really sure about that.
I know
that.
This isn't important.
I just feel like he's so aloof and doesn't really care about this show that, of course he's not going to go prying into what the production's like because he's just showing up for a check.
100% fair.
Yeah, that's how I feel about him.
Yeah.
Once the show starts back up, he starts to kind of tell the audience about his morning drive.
Yeah.
And how, ooh, this was weird. So if you see any weirdos out there, watch out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also he kind of keeps throwing out this, when is it the right time to do something about something you've witnessed?
When should you call 911?
Yeah.
Should I have called 911?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then this is when he starts to call for, viewers to call in.
Yes.
And so Laurel Ann starts to pick up the viewers' phone calls. And the first one they get, she's obviously very uncomfortable with the call.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear what's going on the other side. We just kind of hear her go, what? What are you talking about?
Right.
And we see the discomfort on her face. So who knows what that phone call was about?
Yeah.
And then while Laurel Ann's trying to sort through the calls, Sydney overhears on the police radio a hostage situation is happening.
Things get really wacky real fast, which is, it's funny because as much of a slow burner as this movie is,
Once shit hits the fan.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least once shit hits the fan outside of the studio.
Yeah.
it happens really fast.
In the studio, it's going at a snail's pace.
Yeah.
But outside.
Outside, it's like freaking the 4th of July out there. Ultimately, they get reports about how something weird is going on at a local doctor's office. And they don't have a whole lot of information. And so they're kind of like... Sydney doesn't want Grant to know about it because God knows he'll run rampant with that information. However, Laurel Ann, she messages Grant. I thought that he had just saw it on a news, because he's got a couple of screens up on his computer.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a newsfeed thing. It wasn't until a little bit later I realized that, oh no, it's Laurel Ann was just like... This,
That's
she's got
a breaking
that. Yeah, it's breaking
story.
News. Yeah. She's got that reporter's mind.
Yeah, so he starts to report on it, and of course he's inflating the situation.
Yes,
and Sydney's like, cut it off.
Yeah.
And then they get a phone call from the police going, "Hey, don't talk about this story."
Yeah.
There's not enough details yet. Don't be scaring people.
Yeah. It just kind of escalates from here. And just to kind of save us from a lot of the back and forth, let's just go ahead and stick with the through line of the plot, which is as things progress, they find out that there seems to be some sort of riot that's mm-hmm. happening at this doctor's office.
Yeah, because Ken is actually on the scene and he's yeah. witnessing all this.
Yes.
And calling in and freaking out because yeah. he's like, I'm stuck in a van. Yeah. He says it yeah. on the broadcast.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just like, I gotta get out of here. And then like while that's happening, he starts to report the fact that all of a sudden all these military vehicles are showing up as well, and he can't leave because now he's trapped because roadblocks have already happened. Helicopters are actually there instead of just fake noises. And the crowd is growing.
He describes it as naked people are literally exploding out of the building.
Yeah, which I don't usually want prequels or side films.
Right.
But I want to see how this happened.
I want to see Ken's POV.
Yeah.
Because I have the imagery I have in my head of what he saw.
Yeah.
I want to see it so bad.
Yeah, it's bananas inside my head. Yeah. Like, as far as, and I'm not just talking about the ding-a-langs. but it's just like there's clearly something, like, I mean, that has to be such a bizarre thing to see, that because he says the wall explodes out from yeah. the side of the doctor's office and people are just piling out.
Yeah.
How many people are actually in this town?
I know. How many people are in that building?
Right. And then, not to jump too far ahead, but I mean, like, we learn later on about this doctor and how he was, you know, doing research into this, you know, yeah. situation ultimately.
Giving people unnecessary prescriptions, yeah. which they do kind of mention this.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how Ken had that, or I think it was Ken that reported on that.
I think that's, yeah.
I don't know how he got that information, if it's from, like, the rioters or
yeah,
what.
Maybe that was initially what people were talking about. So while this is happening and Grant really wants to stick with this story, we have to address an unfortunate elephant in the room, which is he has to do a puff piece introducing Lawrence and the Arabians.
Ooh,
this
yeah.
local performance troupe that, folks, ooh. here's
it was 2009.
It was 2009 and Canada.
And Canada.
But we've got some very disappointing brown face.
Yeah.
And also very tasteless depictions of musical terrorists, I guess, as you could almost say. Because yeah. there's the one guy that...
He's Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, he's Osama bin Laden. Now, my morbid curiosity, I'm just like, I almost want to see what this train wreck of a show would have been. But yeah, so Grant has to sit there and listen to these goobers sing their little offensive song about being out in the desert and all this awful stuff. But one of the little girls amongst the group is clearly having some sort of episode.
Yeah, because she starts repeating, I can't remember, how does it start? How I can't remember, pra, 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 pra.
Yeah.
Pra, 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 pra.
That, so, I mean, it could have been the lyrics for all we know.
Yeah, could have been.
But yeah, Grant picks up on this very quick and is just like, there's something very wrong with that little girl. And nobody's paying it any mind.
Yeah. It's almost like she does this every day.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't think she's just being a little all eyes on me drama queen. I think there's something genuinely wrong with her. Like, that's not a normal stutter.
Right. As they're kind of shuffled off after their segment, there's more about the story that comes through from an eyewitness.
Yes.
And we don't hear much from this eyewitness because we just all of a sudden hear screaming.
Yeah, yeah. Sydney thinks that they're just straight up being trolled at this point because realistically they don't have a whole lot of information about what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. And some of the callers that are calling in are just babbling and repeating themselves. So they get cut off.
Yeah, Grant just he's trying his best to live report what's happening, but even he's at a loss for words as far as, like, how do you report absolute nonsense?
Yeah, if you can't see what's going on and you're getting so many conflicting things from people that are seeing what's going on, how can you honestly tell the audience? Also, by the way, all of this is only happening 5 kilometers away.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not very far.
So how it hasn't hit the studio yet?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I always kind of forget that they're just right on the outskirts of town.
Mm-hmm.
And because like what little bit that you see outside of the studio, it feels like it's just isolated on top of a mountain. It might as well be like on another planet. Because that's just how the isolated feeling that you get with all these events.
And plus they're all the way down in the basement too, which Grant mentions a lot because he's like, I can't believe we're in this stinky dungeon of a basement.
Yeah.
You know, so it feels so much more isolating because of that.
Yeah. The movie is very claustrophobic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fantastic for the movie.
It works.
I was very anxious the entire, like, while all this stuff, as it kept, I was just trying to write notes like a madman. And my notes are almost babbling. And barely makes sense. Yeah. They get some more calls in regards to how not only are the people babbling, but also now it's saying that people are starting to chant.
Yeah.
And say, you know, all sorts of crazy things within their chant, and that it's just kind of hard to understand why they're chanting, because they're chanting just weird phrases.
Yeah.
While this happens, they end up getting a call from a news affiliate in England from the BBC.
Yeah.
Old Nigel. And Nigel's wanting to do, like, you know, a live news report via Grant and such. So he starts interviewing Grant about what's going on. And he's trying to sell a story that this is just terrorism. That they just have, you know, local terrorists are causing a fuss. And Grant's trying to kind of rein him in a little bit, but also is incredibly out of his element. I don't think Grant is used to being questioned. You see, I think, the mask of his persona slip a little bit.
Yeah, because I think that he feels a little vulnerable in this moment because he literally has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And he wants to seem like a big voice for the scenario. And he's unable to really report to the BBC what's going on. And the BBC is just as confused about what's going on.
Yeah, precisely.
So, I enjoyed seeing this part because of how it ties in towards the end.
Yes.
So, remember that, listeners. Well, we might as well hear from Ken again.
Oh, boy.
And Ken has completely left the van. He's in a grain silo now because he had to get away because he saw people start to eat other people.
And not just eat other people, but he describes it as if they were trying to climb inside other people and then crawl out of themselves.
Yeah.
Which is just like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I really, really want to see Ken's point of view.
Yeah.
I really want that.
This is a real, like, that is a whole other very fascinating story. And I mean, even though you know literally how that story ends, it would be so fun to just have, if they would have just done like a little short film at least.
Yeah.
Just see Ken going about his day to day, rolling his eyes when he gets, you know, calls from Grant and giving him a hard time. And then this poor guy that I imagine he probably just looks like just a normal average slob.
Yeah.
Like he's probably, you know.
Wears a Hawaiian shirt with a tank top.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
Probably like I like to imagine.
Dishwasher brown hair.
Yes. Yeah. I like to think that he's sitting there in his vehicle. He's got like gas station hot dogs like spread across his dash.
Right.
And he's like stuffing his face. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I'll tell you, it's the traffic out here real bad. So be sure you're taking alternate routes because it's, you know, it's getting thick and sticky. He says as like mustard and ketchup gets on his shirt. He goes, oh, thick and sticky.
Yeah.
Back to you, Grant. Yeah.
I will say, though, it's also nice not to see any of it because it just lets your imagination run completely wild.
Yeah. Like when Ken was describing that visceral imagery. I was imagining stuff from like the end of Smile.
Yeah.
And like that crazy shit. And it's just like, I was thinking of like the craziest imagery in my mind where it's like, yeah, they couldn't have pulled this off, especially since it's a shoestring budget film. It's brilliant to do it this way because your imagination will always have way more interesting stuff than anything they could possibly put on the screen.
Oh, yeah. And as Ken is still describing what's going on right now, he sees one of the people come into the grain silo.
Yeah.
And he's kind of whispering, mumbling to himself, getting closer and closer to Ken.
Yeah. And Grant's just like, Ken, don't get close to him now. Like, it's dangerous. Yeah. Like, you worry about your health. You know, don't worry about the story. Like,
yeah.
And Ken's like, no, I got to, what is he saying?
And then they get cut off by a random signal that is in French.
Yeah.
Which is Canada. They know French.
That's right.
Although they still have to translate it.
That's right.
So Laurel Ann translates it to say, all terms of endearment, don't use them. Also, don't translate this message.
Yeah. Whoops. Well, that's not helpful.
Yeah. Just avoid the English language altogether, it says.
Yeah. They get another call that lets them know that Pontypool is now completely under quarantine. And then Ken gives another call back, which is completely chilling and where I think the entire movie kind of starts to turn on its head, especially for poor Grant.
Right.
Because Ken had recorded what sound was coming from the infected person that he was in the room with, which ultimately is like this weird baby voice that's happening.
Yeah, it's really weird. And the person that he had seen was one of the local, like, popular teenagers, like, football player, all this stuff. So he should be talking in that eeby baby voice.
Yeah. This completely throws off Grant to where he starts having, like, a full-on mental break because he starts to hear like whispers and stuff in his head and Sydney's trying to tell him more details about the story and what the BBC's reporting. And as the viewer, it's incredibly disorienting because she starts talking about Honey the Cat and it's just like, wait, what's happening? And Grant's look like peeking underneath the desk because he thinks that like the baby voice is coming from underneath. And it's just like, what exactly, what's about to happen?
Yeah. I think at this point I was starting to think that Grant might be going a little cuckoo.
Yeah.
And is this all actually happening?
Right.
I thought that's where the movie was gonna go with it, was that he was just having a little mental breakdown on live air.
Yeah, he's just like, listen, I need to step outside and see what's going on. I need to get fresh air. Because obviously, he's just like, he doesn't believe any of this is real.
Yeah,
at this point.
He still thinks it's a big prank that everybody's playing on.
Yeah, he thinks that they're giving him shit for being at the radio station because he's, you know, he knows he's an asshole. So he thinks that they're giving him a hard time because he's a little bit of a jerk. And when he looks outside to prove that there's nothing going on, and that's when they see off screen, mind you, the crazies.
Yeah, I like that he runs out. We don't see what he sees. He runs back in.
Yeah, yeah.
That is such a good thing for this movie.
Yeah. What I like about this, and I wanted to kind of save this for the end of the episode, but you know, screw it. I'm gonna be like Grant. I'm gonna do what I want. And and I want to say that if this has not been adapted into a stage show, they need to do like
it would be a stage show.
It's one set. You've got ultimately, realistically, only four cast members, not counting extras. You know, I'd cut the Lawrence
probably,
and the Arabians.
Yeah, I'd cut them all together.
but it would be a very easy production to put on. And something I've always wanted to do when it comes to, like, because back in my theater days, a show that I wanted to do was a zombie show. But I wanted plants in the audience to rise.
Oh, so people could start coming up and repeating phrases.
That's exactly what
I'd
do.
So
is
cool.
I would have people start repeating what Grant's saying or whatever when he's freaking out. Like in this moment, I would have people in the audience murmuring.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then when ultimately, because we'll go ahead and get to the point where, the studio gets under attack.
Well, yeah, it's literally in this part.
Yeah.
It happens so fast.
Yeah. And I think that what I would do with this is because in this part, we have the studio's under attack. Also, Laurel Ann is now showing signs of infection. Mm. So I think what I would do with the stage show is while everybody in the audience is getting distracted by whatever the hell's happening with the planted people, mm-hmm. I would have Laurel Ann on stage starting to repeat. So you're kind of getting hit from both sides.
Ooh, yeah.
So only people that are paying attention to what's going on stage would go, oh, no, what's this? You know, while the murmuring's happening in the audience, you know, and the audience would be repeating what Laurel Ann is saying.
Nice.
To show that she's now infected with whatever they've got. But then I would have the people stand up and then they would start coming into the studio.
Yeah.
You know, into the stage. And then get to where we're at now in the movie, which is...
They're busting through.
And while this is happening, hey, the doctor that was from the news story, mm-hmm. he sneaks in through a window.
Yes, Dr. Mendez.
Yeah, he's a character and a half.
He is.
He flat out tells them, hey, if that sound booth is completely soundproof, we should probably go ahead and get inside there.
Yeah, they all quickly go in and they lock Laurel Ann out because he's like, no, not that one.
Yeah, not that one. He's already gone.
Yeah, because she's murmuring. Obviously, she's infected now. Yeah. And so they get Dr. Mendez on air telling his story and what's going on.
Or at least the best of his ability because the fact that he's also kind of spouting nonsense.
Yeah, a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
You can tell he's really like trying to overcome it.
Yeah, because he keeps saying breathe.
Breathe.
Which no one really catches on initially.
Yeah. He also kind of explains how these zombies work and how they can't track them if they can't hear them.
Yeah. Because, like, eventually they just kind of give up on the hunt. And what she's doing right now, Laurel Ann, that is, it's almost as if they can't see you as long as you don't say anything.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting dynamic of trying to survive. And I like another aspect of what I would have liked to have seen outside of the studio is potential other survivors. Like, would this be, you know, it's kind of like the movie A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Where you've got the deaf girl. And so I imagine somebody that was deaf would be immune.
Oh,
but also somebody that only speaks in sign language would be.
Well, but American sign language.
American sign language, no.
Hmm.
Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into what's really going on.
Yeah.
Because it pretty much gets mixed into all the nonsense that's happening right now.
Yeah.
And that is that this isn't your stereotypical zombie virus where it's some sort of mutagen of some sort of like, you know, it's not a virus like blood virus.
Yeah.
It is some sort of bizarre language virus.
Yeah. Only English is affected.
Yeah.
And it's only terms of endearment, baby talk, lovey-dovey stuff.
Which is peculiar.
Especially because it's Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Also, it's really cool because Dr. Mendez explains it as why people are repeating phrases is because they become essentially a signal.
Yeah.
It works just like a radio signal where it just goes out and tries to find something. It is just such a unique concept in general.
Absolutely. We get one last call from Ken.
Oh, and Ken, he's starting to do it.
Yeah, he's got it. And
he starts to repeat simple. Simple.
Simple. Simple. Simple. Sample. Simple.
Simple. Sample.
Simple. Sample. Simple. And Grant, I was so surprised. Like, so, you know, again, Grant in the beginning of the movie is a completely different person, I think, than who we get by this point, where he seems actually, you know, heartbroken that poor Ken got.
Yeah, but Sydney's like, he was a pedo.
Right?
It's what? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, where she's just like, what? Yeah, he was, well, we didn't leave our kids alone with him at least, but we've known yeah. him since high school, yeah. so we just kind of let it be.
And then she's like, oh shit, that was an awful obituary.
Yeah, yeah, because they're still broadcasting.
Yeah, they're yeah. still on air because she's refusing to do dead air.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah. So that was a peculiar...
yeah, a peculiar thing to add in, yeah. but also very funny reaction.
Yeah.
And kind of different for 2009.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's more of a, you know, 2020s reaction.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I enjoyed that. Yeah, Laurel Ann is back up and about. She had kind of knocked herself out
mm-hmm. yeah.
by banging on the glass with her head as they were talking. And they start to ask Dr. Mendez, can they read lips?
Right.
Do they know that we're talking right now? And so we start to see that they're using notepads yeah. to communicate now. But it's all interrupted when frickin' Sydney gets a call from her kids.
Yes.
And she is just baby talking up a storm to them
yeah.
like an idiot, even though she's been told multiple times now not to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's just as this is going on, more and more of the infected are just piling in around them. And it's just like, oh man, like these guys, this is it. You know, this is the end. This is the end. There's still a lot left in the movie, but somehow this is the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Sydney's kid gets turned.
Yeah.
Like he starts repeating phrases. Mm-hmm. I don't know how she didn't get turned.
Right.
From yeah. talking, but, you know.
I still don't fully, like coming out of the end, other end of this movie, I still don't necessarily understand the virus. But you know, it kind of, I want to say from this point on the movie is, you know, like when you're having a nightmare or a dream and up until a certain point, it makes sense. And then maybe the dream goes a little bit too long where it starts to become more and more nonsensical.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're at in this movie.
Yeah, it does start to kind of go in many directions now mm-hmm. because we have them forming the plan to make a SOS signal to send out.
Yeah.
Them coming up with the phrase for the SOS signal, which is Sydney Brier is alive.
Yeah.
It gets broadcasted everywhere, even on the loudspeakers.
Yeah.
And then Doc is starting to talk in his native language.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to say any more English. Let's just ramble.
Yeah.
In his native tongue, which I'm not necessarily sure what it
is. I don't know what language it was. Yeah.
I couldn't pinpoint what language it was. But now Sydney and Grant are trying to speak in French and he's not very good at it.
No, no, no. It's pretty much just we.
Oui.
We. Yeah. So because they had done the broadcast on the loudspeaker outside of the building, pretty much all the infected had left. And since they've kind of come to realize that the doctor has been infected this entire time, once they get out of the sound booth, they're kind of poking around in the rest of the studio and they come across the little girl from the Lawrence group. Not great. Grant saves Sydney's life and they both, and I want to stress this, mm-hmm. they both kill her.
Yes.
Because they then argue about whether or not they need to go ahead and kill the doctor.
Yeah.
And argue about who actually killed the little girl.
Yeah. Well, it messed up both of them.
Absolutely.
I was surprised Grant was a little messed up from yeah. it.
You know, even if it's a zombie situation, like taking a life is, it's the first one's the hardest, guys. It gets easier after that.
Suddenly there's like a power outage and yeah. it makes everything kind of restart. So yeah. Oh Canada starts playing over the loudspeakers
yes.
and that makes things turn back into a bad situation.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure why the zombies came back.
I don't really get it either.
But it was just messy and the doctor gets out of the sound booth. Shit's hitting the fan now.
Yeah. However, so you would think that, oh shit, yeah, the doctor's out. He's going to come attack them. No, he helps mm-hmm. them one last time because yeah. they end up kind of locking themselves in like a storage
yeah,
closet.
I feel like he's kind of on the edge
yeah.
of turning still.
Yeah. He runs out the window that he had originally came in and starts screaming at the top of his lungs, Sydney Brier is alive, to try to turn all the infected back around to be distracted with him. So good job, Dr. Mendez, for one last little heroic moment.
Meanwhile, Sydney and Grant, I'm not sure how long they've been in this room, but we see that Sydney's been writing like all of her last confessions on the wall, which some of them are kind of out there.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, if everything turns out all right, now you've got all this evidence against you.
Right.
So, And Grant has figured out that he has to decipher the words of the BBC broadcast.
Right. Yeah. Again, this is that, like I said, it's that part of your dream where it starts kind of going, what's happening? All the while that this time has passed, Sydney has been getting drunk as a skunk because it's over. What's the point in anything? And then she starts to show signs that she too is in fact infected. Grant starts to put his theory into action that how do you solve a virus that attacks language? Well, you have to make it stop making sense.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts to try to figure out how to derail her train of thought as she keeps repeating the same word. And he does it. And he actually saves her.
He's like, kill is kiss.
Kill is kiss. Kill is kiss.
Remember, kill, kiss.
Yeah. And this breaks her. Like she comes back around and is no longer infected or overcomes the infection.
Yeah.
And takes this phrase literal. And so goes from kill to kissing.
Yay!
And they give each other a kiss. Okay. It's a celebratory thing. I don't think that there's anything particularly, there's not really chemistry between these two.
Yeah.
It's
but
it's
there might be now.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those situations where it's the end of the world. We might as well. What's the harm? We'll be dead soon anyway.
Right. Might as well have some fun.
But because of this revelation, they're just like, holy shit. You know, Grant's like, we have to get on the air now. We have to spread this word. I'm going to save the human race. He is now the hero of the universe, pretty much, at least through his eyes.
Shit's really hitting the fan
up
above ground because the military's coming in
full
force. They're going to bomb the town.
Yeah.
So we're starting to hear explosions overhead as Grant tries to get this radio broadcast out to make the zombies forget words.
Yeah, yeah. And he's trying so hard to figure out how to just basically word salad it and throw off the thought process of the zombies. And it's an incredibly challenging task because the fact that even no matter how you do word association, eventually the words will match whatever it is that you're saying.
Yeah, because they kept coming across words that they're like, no, that means the same thing.
Yeah.
And eventually he's like begging the military, since he knows they can hear him.
Yeah.
He's like, stop, you're killing people. You've got to stop this. We can figure this out.
Yeah.
And eventually the shooting does stop.
Yeah.
And we get a freaking fantastic monologue from Grant.
Yeah.
If you watch this movie for any reason, I'd say watch it for this part because it is just so wonderfully written and he delivers it so well.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. So.
Yeah.
Favorite part of the movie.
Unfortunately, this beautiful monologue falls on deaf ears because though they think that maybe they have won, alas, they did not.
Mm.
Credits.
Yep. Movie ends on a kiss.
Yeah. Now, the neat thing, stick around for the credits because as they roll, you get to hear news reports about the Pontypool Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yep. They're trying to spin it as something completely different than what it was.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, this crazy event that happened in this town. Everybody went nuts, whatever. But this will never happen again as an isolated incident. And then as these reports go on, they start reporting on similar situations in other towns. And then eventually it's this thing has spread.
Yep.
Now, there is a post-credit scene that happens. And the neat thing is this movie did end up getting a spiritual sequel. Where you have several of the same actors and stuff just playing different characters.
Right.
And I really, really, really want to watch it. I I do, however, wish that we could get that Ken movie. I just think that's a more, I think that's a very interesting story.
It's gonna have to be a Podcast Magoria production, I guess.
That's right. Eventually someone's gonna hear this show and give us money to make these movies. But or at the very least somebody will hear the show and make the movies we suggest, just, you know, 10%. That's yeah. All I ask for.
Put our logo up at the end of the credits. You know, special thanks to Podcast Magoria. And we'll be good.
$30,000.
$30,000.
Just pay my year's wage.
Please.
Yeah. So I can just put all my effort towards this. But $30,000 per project concept. I will gladly.
Yes.
I'll pump it out, man. But yeah, so Verdict, absolutely recommend this movie. I think it's fantastic. I want to own it. And I would like to, I don't know if it exists, if there's like a two pack, because I want this. I haven't even seen the sequel.
Hey,
but I want it.
Yeah. I want to see it really bad now that I know about it. Mm-hmm. So Verdict, obviously love it.
Yeah.
Such a unique concept. Amazingly shot for it to be just one set, essentially.
Yeah.
Wonderful use of plot devices.
Yeah.
Everybody does a really good job. The tension's great. Just... Mm-hmm. Mwah.
Yeah. This is a fantastic film. It's easily probably one of my favorite ones on this year's list.
Yeah.
It is available to stream at random on all sorts of streaming services. So good luck to you as far as where you'll find it, because it bounces back and forth between Tubi and then behind paywalls.
Yeah.
So you might get to see it for free, or you might have to buy it.
You know, if you're able to check it out, have fun with your imagination.
Yes. Yeah. That's the best part of it. All right. That brings us to the end. This episode of Podcast Magoria's Halloween A to Z. Our next episode is our Q episode. Q for Queen of the Damned.
Ooh.
You know, we haven't really had much in the way of vampire stuff outside of Fright Night. I thought we were going to get away with just having one vampire movie this year. And alas, here we are again.
Yep. At least it's a classic that I know that I like.
Yeah, okay. Here, I'll give you a little spoily. I've never seen this movie.
So, I know.
So I guess we'll see how we feel about that next time. Until next time, if you find yourself listening to a little broadcast and things start to kind of go off the rails, tell yourself that it's all just a radio drama like War of the Worlds, and it'll be okay. And while you hear the explosions outside of your house, remember to do one very important thing, and that is you must stay.
Uh-oh.
Stay.
James.
Stay.
No, stay.
Stay.
Stay is not, no, stay.
Stay.
Stay is,
Stay.
Stay is, smile. Smile. Stay is smile. No, stay is smile. Stay is sun. Stay is spooky.
Spooky.
Blah, blah, blah.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Podcast Magoria, hosted by Autumn Campbell and James Davis, theme by James Davis. Like what you heard, be sure to follow us wherever you get podcasts. Be sure to check out our social media and TikTok for additional content and spooky previews for future projects. And as always, stay spooky.
Heheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheh